Well, the subject is a spirituality and service, and I'm Jerry Baker. And I know some of you already. Why don't we just go and say our names real quickly?
Okay, I'm Michael.
Michael.
I'm Noreen.
Noreen.
Doug.
Doug.
Dale.
Judy.
Jereen.
Kate.
Ruth.
Ruth. Jerry.
Not a Judy.
Judy number three.
Judy. Oh.
Dick.
Dick. Joyce.
Yeah.
And
Sharon.
These are all names that were very popular at a certain time. They're not like Michaela and all these new names.
Starfire.
Okay, subject of a spirituality of service, because I'm going to use a book that I just published last month by that title, and the title is The Spirituality of Service: Reflections on a Lifelong Journey of Faith and Work Among the World's Poor. And I'll describe a little bit more about the book, but getting into the subject of spirituality of the first session, I thought it'd be good to, do you want to pull up to the circle? That'd be great.
I'm good.
You're good.
I don't like to join things.
Peer pressure.
Is this Mike?
This is Mike.
Okay. Is he related to you?
No.
There's no dues.
Sorry.
It's all right.
Don't like intimate circles. But you know, I thought it'd be good for us to explore this word, this term, spirituality. It's used very frequently these days in many, many different ways. And the way I'd like to do that, maybe with each of the sessions, is to start with scripture in the form of Lectio Divina. Are you familiar with Lectio Divina? It's praying the scriptures rather than studying the scriptures. And the form we'll use, we'll just use about the first five minutes to do this. I'm going to read a scripture from 1 Corinthians. And usually when we hear scripture, what happens? I mean, you hear it in Matins or something, most of it goes over our head. And we're trying to grasp the message or the story or whatever. So we need to hear it a second time. And then actually we need to hear it a third time. And it starts sinking in. And the way that happens is that the Spirit starts moving within us, and we find prayer and we find meaning in the scripture itself. Right?
I have to go over there.
They won't let you sit in the back row.
Sorry. So I'm going to read this scripture through once. We have just a very brief, and then we hear it in a different voice, which is Judy's voice. And the second time you hear it, just listen with your heart for a word or a phrase that speaks to you as the Spirit starts moving within you with the scripture. And then I'm going to read it again, and then we'll have a couple minutes of silence and see what images come to your mind. It's not to study, it's not to analyze, it's to see what images appear, and we might share a little bit of those images. Remembering that the theme that we're looking at is spirituality. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the human heart conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him, these things God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For what human being knows what is truly human except the human spirit that is within? So also no one comprehends what is truly God's except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit that is from God, so that we may understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we speak of these things in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual things to those who are spiritual. Well, here a second time, just maybe with your eyes closed, listen for the word or phrase that lifts itself up for you. And then we repeat that out loud afterwards.
Reading from 1 Corinthians 2, beginning at verse 9. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the human heart conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him. These things God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For what human being knows what is truly human, except the human spirit that is within? So also, no one comprehends what is truly God's, except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit that is from God, so that we may understand the gifts bestowed on us by God. And we speak of these things in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual things to those who are spiritual.
So if any of you have a word that came to your heart or mind, you might want to just say that out loud. To me, it was the Spirit that is within.
The Spirit searches.
A gift from God.
Through the Spirit.
No one knows.
Spirit searches everywhere.
For those who love him.
Taught by the Spirit.
I'm going to read it one more time and then just see if there's some images that appear for you, or revelations of some kind. But as it is written, what no eye has seen, nor ear heard, nor the human heart conceived, what God has prepared for those who love him, these things God has revealed to us through the Spirit. For the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. But what human being knows what is truly human except the human spirit that is within? So also no one comprehends what is truly God's except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the Spirit that is from God, so that we may understand the gifts most bestowed on us by God. And we speak of these things in words, not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual things to those who are spiritual. Just take a couple minutes of silence to meditate on that word. Anyone want to share any image or thought or comes to mind?
What strikes me is the human spirit seeking God. Because we do it every moment of our life. In our work, in our conversation, in our association with education. But we can only do it through our human spirit. Until. And that's what the scripture says. Until.
Exactly. Anybody else?
Well, I think about the spirit within, which I heard said were such an image for me. I think the story about the woman searching for a coin, you know, just turning everything over, you know how you feel when you lose something around the house and you just put all of your energies into it to find it. And that the spirit is within.
But it's also a gift. We can search and search and search, but it's there to be given to us. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination.
I think the thing that struck me is that I'm always trying to figure things out with my brain, with my head, rationally. And what I understood from this passage is that that's not very helpful when you're trying to figure out spiritual issues, that it's from a different place completely.
Taught by the Spirit, it kind of bothers me because I think of different people that interpret the Bible or have their testimony or their confession, and so how do I know that they were really taught by the Spirit if I don't really agree with it? But if they think that they are, if they say they are taught from the Spirit, I shouldn't be doubting that. But how do you really know if somebody is taught by the Spirit?
It's easy to judge other people.
Seems to me it's possible that we could all be taught different things by the Spirit. And even though it isn't like you're disagreeing with someone else's spiritual wisdom, it's just that it's different.
I worked on this book for a couple of years, actually 40 years, because I dipped into my journals in many, many places that we worked and lived. I worked with Luther Robert Day Enterprise International and Bible International Church and Service for about 40 years in international relief and development work. And I kept journals. And I've written before on the how to do it of help working with people, but I wanted to integrate what it is that motivated me in my spiritual life, and how that's integrated into our work with the poor and with needy people. And so it ended up being a book I think that raises up a lot of themes, spiritual practices, encounters with people in situations along the way. And I asked Art Simon, who is the founder of Bread for the World, to write the foreword. And when it came back, he said that I gave him a manuscript, of course. And he said he couldn't get through this book fast. So he and his wife read a chapter a day for 35 chapters, aloud to each other, and dealt with the questions that are at the end of each chapter. And then he wrote the foreword. And I had never run into this this quote before, but he starts the book out with this quote. And so this is trying to integrate and understand the relationship between service and spirituality, our spirituality, and what we do, our work in the world. This comes in the beginning, the first in the foreword. No one should spend so much time in contemplation that they ignore the needs of a neighbor, nor be so absorbed in action that they feel no need for contemplation of God. That was written a long time ago by St. Augustine. And I thought that sums up what we deal with in our attempts to do good work, to be good stewards, to do good work through these many programs. But he also said, and it is forward, spirituality is maddeningly elusive term, one that can mean almost anything. So it is refreshing that the author anchors the spirituality in the faith confessed and nurtured by the church and practiced in the world. The connection comes through, and I tried to make this point also, that most books on spirituality are written by theologians or teachers of prayer or priests and nuns and so forth, and I'm a layperson. So I wanted to be able to look at what there is about spirituality that can be applied in any walk of life where we're trying to be of service to others. And I also wrote the first chapter last, and it's called My Life, A Short History of the Unexpected. And I wonder if maybe some of you also had a life that was unexpected. Didn't turn out, I mean, you didn't plan it all ahead of time, but it was motivated by a faith and a deep spirituality that you discerned along the way, and it has resulted in a good life in many, many different terms. And I started that, I found this quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer: "We must be ready to allow ourselves to be interrupted by God. God will constantly be crossing our paths and canceling our plans." So no matter how well we plan our lives, they turn out a little bit differently many times than we had planned them. But if we're grounded in the Spirit, some of this scripture that we've been dealing with, I think that the foundation is there to move ahead. So in the one chapter, there's only about two chapters that I don't use much from my journals. The rest of them are from journals from all over the world, where I found myself working with in different programs, projects, communities, rural people mostly. This chapter on spirituality of service, I tried to look at what is spirituality, and that's why I wanted to raise this scripture up first, to see what images this brings to you, and what is spirituality to you. So, as you may have heard, I'm sure as pastor you've heard, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. I don't believe in organized religion, but I'm very spiritual. And so these terms keep coming up, and especially with the young people that I started to work with in the latter part of my career, that generation, which has basically, except for your kids, of course, have left the church. Our kids don't go to church. We raised them in the church. Have you ever had that experience, that your kids left
50,
the church?
50%.
I have three of them here who have left the church. They're here.
Well, they're here at least. That's good.
They're here for their mom.
Yes.
But so I tried to think of, well, what do I mean by spirituality? What do they mean by it when they say that? So what if you were going to define spirituality, what would you say? Well, what words? I'm not expecting to write a definition of spirituality, but what words would have to be in that image or definition?
Well, I think the scripture you started with says it. It's we get to that place where our human spirit becomes our spirituality. And I think that's, for a lot of us, that's as far as we want to go.
That's as far as?
We want to go.
Yeah.
Because the other stuff is like ethereal, it's out there, but
yeah.
I can't really contact it with my brain. I can't really process it and keep it organized. So my human spirit says climb the mountain, you know, get to the top of the corporation, get to the root of the matter, fix it. And we, that's my interpretation of those that are spiritual and not religious.
Yeah. Anybody else think about it?
Well, I think many young people are referring to their feelings that there is a God. They haven't rejected God. And they think about God, and they feel there's something out there bigger than they are, but they're not willing to pluck it down in a certain place. And that's been the experience I've had with a lot of kids in school. And my daughter.
And I think it's kind of, it's very personal, but it's not about somebody else's rules or, you know, that I have to believe this, that somebody else is saying that, but it's what I feel the need to believe.
That's what people who say they're spiritual.
That's what I think, when spiritual versus religious. The term religious brings to context rules, that I must do this.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I think.
I think my kids would say it's a sense of God for you. An involving holy one, creator.
And have any of you ever, have you read or thought about this term, spirituality, and what it means?
I think it means what you all are saying too, but I think probably a lot of young people, and me too, think it also implies a certain compassion in life, a certain giving, a certain freedom to be unselfish, or inclination. Whether they think there's a personal God or not, there's that. That's when I meet people who I say, oh, I think they're spiritual, that's what I see sometimes. Service.
Yeah. In my first manuscript, I had some good readers give me some feedback, and critical feedback. I said, when I hear people say they're spiritual but not religious or that those kind of phrases, my first internal impulse is judgmental. I'm thinking, okay, what are your spiritual practices? Because I think if you're spiritual, you should have some spiritual practices. But then my reader, my feedback said, well, you know, are you judging them? And probably I have a tendency to do that. So I was looking for my definition, which is important to me. And I've read a lot of books on prayer and spirituality. I want to read you the first paragraph of why I started looking at this seriously. An important interface between spirituality and action may not be readily apparent or appreciated by some practitioners of Christian service. Much of the modern emphasis on spirituality is focused on the inward journey, contemplation, and growing intimacy with God, or what they call God, whoever they call God. The emphasis on activists in the areas of social service, justice, poverty, development, the environment, all these movements, has been on programs of direct service and action, outreach, organization, advocacy. Both are valid, and each strengthens the other. But what may not always be clear to those working in fields of social action and service is how the deepening of one's spiritual life helps to strengthen and sustain a life of service. This is especially so in the face of the challenges presented by the often overwhelming needs and demands of this calling. And I'm not only talking about a career like mine, working overseas with poor people in the third world, but in many settings in this country, where there's so many social needs and poverty and poverty of spirit and addiction and that kind of thing. And it is, we know that being burned out is a common feature of people that choose to work in action, social action, advocacy, and so forth. And the cynicism. Maybe also. What do you chuckle about?
I agree.
You're too young to know.
Not as an interim pastor who follows pastors.
We often think that you have to have a little bit of time involved before you can get there. But some of us develop cynicism early.
Well, does a person that is says they're spiritual, does it mean they should have, or they do have a spiritual life of some spiritual practices, or is it just something that ignores God and they say when you ask them, well, I'm spiritual but I'm not religious?
I don't think they ignore God. I think there's, in many cases, searching and thinking, but not in a box.
So the church is a box?
For some of them. Because maybe they're... Who was talking about their church this morning? Somebody was talking about their church. And oh, Judy! Her negative experience and then her positive experience. And I think some of them have felt negative experience, even though it wasn't maybe, in the sense that to other people it wasn't negative, but to them it was for whatever reason, because of their personality, because of their life. The crutch, too, to say, well, you know, I don't know what it is, so I'll just ignore it for a while. But I just know too many young people who have a lot of questions, a lot of talk, a lot of searching. Of course, I taught ESL for a long time, they're always searching.
Don't you think, too, I mean, as a church, we always try to give people answers. Come up with, this is what you believe, this is what we believe. Isn't that, and how often do we step back and just, what do you really believe? I don't have the answer for you. Why don't you, let me help you discover the answer.
I mean, I think the other piece too is my question in response to your question is, well, how many of our religious have spiritual practices?
Oh.
How many of us who are in some kind of structured religion have a spiritual practice?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would say it depends on the age bracket. It depends on the time and energy available to put into spiritual practices. I would say anyone my age to probably 40, maybe 50, 55, might not have spiritual practices in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone above that takes home their, you know, daily prayer booklet from church or whatever, you know, goes to their Bible study every week or has a small group they meet with, or, you know, they have spiritual practices or they go walk every morning or whatever it is. And I think in that regard, if you would ask those same people who are in the church and don't have structured spiritual practices, they'd probably be able to tell you what their spiritual practices are in hindsight. And I think the same would be true of the spiritual who are not religious, would be able to say, well, no, I don't have this thing I do every day, or I don't have this activity I see as that every week. But if you probe them enough, you could probably identify those things.
And it's scattered and not disciplined.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's very personal, too.
Yes.
I think that's the point I hear you making.
Yeah.
But I think you hit with time constraints.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Time constraints is what we live by. I never had a watch until I got here because I had to be certain places at certain time. And yet I've lived in the world without a watch my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
But now someone relies on my time, so their time is important. And when you get a little older, you hopefully evolve away from it, not towards it. And that's where the, you know, spirituality comes in. I got time right now.
What? How much time do you have a week?
Right now, every moment. Every moment.
And how much
for a number of reasons. Pardon?
How much time does everybody else have? The same amount of time that you have.
Right? It depends on what their priorities are.
Yeah.
You know, it's all a question of what's relevant, what's important, where are we going, what do we got to be? Do we need to manifest our egos to maintain a certain level of commitment to reality, or do we just sit back and enjoy
it? Give me a personal example. Our son, who lives in Portland, and he would not mind if I tell him. He's not a person that goes, but he would say he is spiritual, but he doesn't have time for religion. But he gets stressed out, so what does he think about? He thinks of going to acupuncture or a massage.
Right.
Or he spends every Sunday morning watching NFL football rather than religion. And he's constantly got aches and pains, and he's only in his 30s. And I do a spiritual practice which is called stretch and pray. I'm going to demonstrate it in the Ark tomorrow morning. I don't know if you've heard of it from Murray Fink, the Bishop of the Pacifica. It's a wonderful spiritual practice. It takes about 10 minutes, 20 minutes if you want to do the prayer part. I said, if you did that every day, Daniel, you would have your body would be limber, you'd be breathing better, you'd be less stressed, and you could even add a prayer in there. It wouldn't take you more than 2 minutes. But rather than let it build up and have that tension in his body, and then he all of a sudden needs to go and see a doctor or whatever.
But we're not all structured for discipline. Some of us are gifted with discipline and others of us aren't. And it depends on where we are in our lives, whether it's important or not. And so I think that's another piece, because until you are wise enough, or until you, and depending on what your gifts and nature are, it may not be something that, for you it's a practice, for him it might not ever be, because he doesn't have that capability of discipline. And I understand that, because I swing through that pendulum in life too, where, you know, every day I wake up and have a devotion, and then suddenly something changes, and I can't do devotions for the life of me. Or, you know, I do yoga every week, and then I can't do it at all. So, you know, it's, I think it's part of learning.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that thing about the spiritual practices of our spiritual leaders. Mm-hmm. I didn't touch on that at all in this book, although I did mention that I assume that priests and pastors probably do the daily office or whatever, but, you know, one pastor said, yeah, really. You made an interesting point, because you mentioned the word belief. Is it a matter of belief, our spiritual practices, or is it a matter of our relationship with the Spirit and with God?
I think it's relationship. I mean, beliefs are nebulous sometimes. Somebody tells me a belief, or that, or I have to memorize a belief. But I think it really comes from a relationship. I may not use the right words, or I may not use the right approach. Sometimes, because I always, in counseling, I always tell people, I said, beware of easy answers. Beware of the books that have 5 ways to happiness. Because you'll get through the first step, and then you can't do it, so you're really depressed then. You know, so I think it really is a belief. It's you know, and I think sometimes you know, at least from my experience, sometimes we set out the doctrine, we set out the beliefs, and that's what we expect people to do. And I don't think that then the spiritual practice really comes from that.
Yeah,
I
just a little anecdote with my daughter, because when she was in her, like, 15 or 16, she was looking at doing confirmation, and she kind of didn't want to do it. And I think it has to do with this thing about how you have to believe certain things in order to go through confirmation. So I really encouraged her to meet with one of the priests who was a woman, and she met with her, and I found out only later what the conversation was about. And it was really like, you can ask questions. It's really all about asking questions and having a relationship, and not, you don't have to believe certain things. And so she went through confirmation, and, you know, she's kind of found her way back to the church. I mean, she on her own, nothing to do with me, thank God. And I think it's because she does have her own, it is really unusual for young people. I keep thinking, did I do something wrong? But she attends the church and has a great relationship with this congregation. And I think that it's because she was permitted to not have to have certain beliefs. But that's a part of it.
I was thinking, Grant Tinker, who is a Lutheran pastor, he always says he's Osage in Norwegian Lutheran. But he said, in the Osage, we don't praise, we don't honor, but we always give thanks. And giving thanks, we do that. And when I was principal of
Menominee Indian Reservation School. One of these kids who was in my office all the time, we were on a forestry trip, and he saw this one tree, and he said we should stop and thank the Creator for this. And offering tobacco happened all the time. And another girl who was driving me crazy, the teacher took them out, they collected all these leaves and they were classifying the leaves. And when they were done, the teacher said, well, what should we do with them? And she said, return them to the earth and thank the Creator. So in Thanksgiving, we may not have time, but if we're always thanking, I think that's a spiritual practice.
And we can learn from those traditions, and including Eastern traditions. I don't really commend that as an expert at all in Eastern traditions, but I had exposure to many people of other faiths in my work. And mindfulness, for instance, is a Buddhist approach. And that's very similar to being to pray constantly. We're going to talk about that later in the week if you want to come. We talk about prayer, how do you pray constantly. So these definitions of spirituality, I think is worth thinking about what we mean by that. And I just wanted to read a little bit about what I found in a couple of the writers. I found Presbyterian writer Marjorie Thompson's definition of spiritual life to be straightforward and helpful. She says, in one sense, spirituality is simply the capacity for a spiritual life, the universal human capacity to receive, reflect, and respond to the Spirit of God. And that's easy for me to remember because there's 3 R's there. Receive, and reflect, and respond. One day we don't watch television, we only watch it in the evening, but one day I happened to be flipping through before the news, and there was Oprah. And now she's a spiritual guru in this country, and I heard her say, well, my definition, that's the only thing I heard her say. I've ever heard her say, because I've never watched her program, but she said, my definition of spirituality is having an open heart. So, that is really a broad definition of spirituality. When I came down to it, and I read many definitions, and I kept trying to grasp what does spirituality mean, I had to come up with something simple that I could repeat and remember it, you know, from time to time, and say, what is spirituality for you? And it came down to a few words: following in the footsteps of Jesus and helping others. That's my definition of spiritual life. That doesn't say I believe in a set of doctrines or beliefs. I do have my beliefs, but I think it's about a relationship with the Spirit of Jesus. And if you try to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, there isn't anything that is not included in the spiritual life, including going off in the mountain for all night and praying, or serving others, or healing, or preaching, or that kind of thing.
Were you always on the journey of seeking spirituality or understanding of it, or can you recollect back to a time where it became more important?
Well, I'm a cradle Lutheran. I grew up in the church, and I didn't leave the church except I was, you know, not very intense at certain times when I was young. But I think it was in the last 2 or 3 decades of my career that I started journaling and practicing, doing spiritual practices in the midst of my work. Because what was happening was that the organization that I was working with had started as a Christian organization. And as has happened across the culture, the new people that are coming in are tremendously educated, motivated, environmentalists into the women's movement. They're much more competent than I ever was when I started in the career, because there was no place to train when I started in my career 40 years ago. And they can go to school and get a master's degree in international development or a PhD in any number of places now. But I mean, there wasn't any place. I just learned to go, to, you know, through the School of Hard Knocks. So, but being with and working alongside of other people that were motivated in the same way was a tremendous benefit.
Motivator.
Motivator, and thing that nurtured me. I'd like to hear from the young people that are here, that are somewhat of this generation that we've been talking about. Kate, do you have anything, any thoughts?
Well, I guess my thought is, it's been interesting to hear the word spirituality connected with young people, because I guess that surprises me that those two things are going together and that it's not all generations.
Yeah.
So
I think what, you know, probably what we're saying is that we hear that we're spiritual but not religious, more in the generation that came after ours.
Okay.
You know, that left the church.
Okay.
You go to a lot of churches, you don't see much but besides gray hairs like ours.
A lot of those gigantic evangelical churches have tons of young people. And they're growing and growing. We have a couple, 5,000 people churches like that in Columbus?
And isn't that because of the relationships?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. There's this one that...
You believe whatever you want. Or, I mean, not whatever, but I mean, they're fairly loose doctrinally and
right.
Everything.
But they're studying. I mean, they have...
But then they get really into it,
deep. They meet together, and they have all their close friends, and we kind of poo-poo them, but they're growing, and not necessarily, though we're not necessarily growing in that way.
No, not
there
at all.
Certainly lots of more traditional churches that are growing with lots of young people, too. Mm-hmm. Well, that's been my experience, at least. Maybe not for us.
What motivates you to want to hang up with us old guys?
I put you on the spot.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
She likes all her goods.
No. No, she's smarter than that.
I guess I'm just discerning about the role of service in my life and trying to figure out what spirituality means that we've been talking about.
If we experience God much through each other, then it seems like an aspect of spirituality is through the Christian community and being part of that Christian community and sharing in that Christian community and helping each other with a Christian life. For me, an individual relationship with God as spirituality is not nearly enough.
I used to tell the kids when I was teaching confirmation, I don't know if it's theologically correct, but I like it. And that is that if you're going out camping and you make a campfire and you've got all the coals, what do? To put that fire out and make it safe? You separate all the coals. And so if you're within the church and feeding each other, the coals are staying warm. But when you're going over here and over here, it's harder to keep those coals warm. That's what we do to put out the fire. So as I said, I don't know if it's theologically correct, but I still like it.
Someone will let
you. I'm sure that's written in the scriptures somewhere. Yeah,
it must. Yeah, it must. I'm not going to get
it. I think society is, obviously, is changing. And that part of my difficulty with your definition is that Jesus Christ is listed Because suddenly I go, so my Buddhist friends are not spiritual?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I understand, right. You know, but it limits who can fit within your definition. And so that was one of my initial reactions to your response. But I think the other piece is that when I look at my friends and my circles and my colleagues, and I'm 36, which seems old now. I'm not one of the young in the group that gets asked the question about, what do you think, because you're in the younger generation. But we find that community outside the church. I mean, those of us who even go to church find our supportive community outside the church. And so it's not in the ritual setting or the institutional setting where those relationships are. And it's not that they're any less Christian or any less service or any less spiritual, but they're not within the institutional structure. And that makes it difficult to be a pastor. But I think speaks to a different understanding of priorities in life. I think you got that spot on. I think priorities and values are really at the center of this conversation, and really are at the heart of what spirituality is and how that fits within life.
Well, thank you for... You know, you're right on about it. My most critical reviewer, who I appreciate greatly, and I used a lot of her feedback when she did the proofing of the book, she made that point. Why don't you make it very wide so that it includes everybody? And I said, I can't, because I'm just writing about Christian spirituality. And so when I look at the life of the church, and I mean my life in the church, I realize that I get, if you ask me where I feel closest to God, it's going to be up in the mountain a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not where the Eucharist is served, you know, that's not where the baptism is done and the mm-hmm. fellowship of the believers is, because you need each other. And so that's a gnawing problem for me, is what is going to happen to the church as the next generation. That's why I'm so hopeful when I come to a place like Holden. There's multi-generational here and all kinds of kids. And it just makes me giggle inside.
There's an interesting aspect of theology that relates to what you said, Coralie. God gathers us together. And he just doesn't gather the people of your church together. He gathers non-Christians. He gathers us in whatever kind of community aspect will build people up.
I don't know if this fits in or not, but when you say feeling close to God, I feel it in Europe, in those old cathedrals and churches, and I don't know a soul there.
Yeah,
and
right.
Yet it's the thousands of years or hundreds of years that somehow fits me.
Right.
It's.
In fact, in a chapter here on contemplation, I use the example of Jane Goodall, who I think she came back to belief in God, not necessarily doctrinal following, but she had this kind of experience in Notre Dame's cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
It was a contemplative, powerful experience, and that happens to her in unexpected places. And that's why I call the chapter spontaneous contemplation, because you can't tell when it's going to happen, but it's this powerful experience. And I mean, I look for it, and I'm open to it, but it doesn't always happen. You know, by my setting it up to happen. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I hope that if you want to come back tomorrow, we're going to talk about the servant of a call to service. So appreciate you coming.